Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This is a story that so many people have suggested, and I'm going to apologise. I'm hiring a social media assistant in the new year because I'm horrid at keeping track at who requests what. So I am sorry if you're suggested a story and I cover it and I don't give you a shout out. It's nothing against you. I'm just simply disorganised. But the first person to suggest Dakota's story was a lovely Sarah J in the Facebook group. So thank you to Sarah for bringing this story to the top of my list. I feel lately each week is getting harder and more heartbreaking, and Dakota's story is no exception. Please take heed of my content warning at the top of the episode. To date, I've brought you more than 170 stories on this podcast so far, and I thought I'd heard everything and had become somewhat desensitised, but this one got me. It is disturbing, so again, this story may not be for everyone. Listener discretion is highly advised today. And before we get into this week's horrific story, this will be my last episode of 2024. Thank you to everyone for being here with me week after week and supporting what I do. This podcast takes a lot from me, not only time-wise, but emotionally. There has been many a time this year where I've had to stop recording partway through an episode and cry. Cry for the child who has lost their life and all the experiences they will never go through. Cry because of all the pain and suffering they had to go through before their death, and for the devastation that is left behind. This podcast and to tell the stories of these beautiful children means so very much to me. I thank you for allowing me to keep these children's stories alive so they are not forgotten. December 2019, Dayton, Ohio. When paramedics arrived at the McLean family home, they would be shocked at what they would find. But the horrors of the condition of the home would only just be the beginning. A 10-year-old's lifeless body painted a picture of a very dark story. A dark story that would reveal the most disturbing horrors imaginable. This is Dakota's story.
The irony is that these defendants, especially McLean, will receive better treatment incarcerated in the penal system in Ohio than these three defendants gave and treated to Dakota Collins.
Dakota Collins was born December 18, 2008, to parents Robin Collins and Al McLean in Wisconsin. Collins and McLean were only babies themselves when Dakota was born, still teenagers. And unfortunately, as teenage romances generally go, it didn't last. And Collins and McLean separated when Dakota was only still small. McLean only had an 8th grade education, and at 19 years old, he already had a son from a previous relationship, a child he had no custody of. He didn't see the child and he wasn't a part of their life. That is the kind of person McLean was, and it seemed history was going to repeat itself with Dakota. After the split, Collins had full custody of Dakota, and she quickly realised she was in over her head. She moved in with family friend Anita Bredson and her husband, with the view of them adopting the baby. But this didn't seem to have protected Dakota from alleged abuse from his mother. Reports of Collins and her boyfriend at the time spanking 11-month-old Dakota to the point where the baby was bruised. This incident resulted in a report being placed with Child Protective Services, or CPS, as we'll refer to them in this story. And because of this report, Collins would be charged with criminal child abuse, intentionally causing harm, battery and neglect of a child in Dane County. Charges she would plead guilty to and be placed on probation, all before Dakota's first birthday. Collins would only be allowed supervised visits with her son. Just 2 years after this, Collins' probation was revoked for drug use and she would be sent to prison. As Anita had no legal claim to Dakota, he would spend time in the foster care system. Around this time in Dakota's life, McLean was in and out of the picture. Anita and her husband were still trying to legally adopt the little boy, as was Dakota's maternal grandmother. Despite these people who Dakota already had a bond with wanting to have him and raise him in a loving environment, despite this, Dakota would spend the next couple of years living in three separate foster homes until Child Services finally tracked down his father, Al McLean. In 2012, Dakota's father, McLean, decided he wanted to step up and take custody of his son. A DNA test was done to prove paternity. After this test confirmed McLean was Dakota's father, it was basically a done deal and he formally adopted the five-year-old. There was no reason not to allow this to happen. McLean didn't have a criminal record at this stage, and there was no red flags to suggest what was going to happen. And McLean seemed happy to jump through all the hoops. He bought a house in Dayton, Ohio, to keep stability for the kindergartner. Also living in the home was McLean's girlfriend, Amanda Hines, Hines's sister, Jennifer Ebert. McLean also had temporary custody of his three-year-old brother, who I have chosen not to name in this episode. Now, when I said McLean didn't have a criminal record when Dakota's adoption was being finalised late 2012, early 2013, only a few months after Dakota went to live with his father, all of that would change. July 2013, McLean was accused of hitting his girlfriend, Hines, over the head with a pipe, dragging her by her hair to a car and punching her before driving away with her. McLean would be charged with second-degree recklessly endangering safety and disorderly conduct, a felony and a misdemeanor, charges that would later be dismissed after Hines refused to testify against McLean. July 30th, 2014, McLean filed with the family court with his intention to move to Erie, Pennsylvania, and this was all approved by a family law court judge. Under the requirements of McLean bringing Dakota back to see his mother four times a year, one phone conversation per week, and Collins having access to his school and doctor's reports. Although Robin Collins initially agreed, she would later redact this agreement, saying she was pressured into signing her rights away, but at this point it would be too late. Although this move would never eventuate, McLean would cut off all contact between Dakota and his mother. February 19th, 2016, Montgomery County CPS contacted the Dayton police requesting a welfare check on Dakota due to the suspicion of child abuse. The police did attend the home, but no one answered, so they just left and did not conduct any follow-up visits. March 6, 2016, Hines contacted Dayton police to report that her now fiancé McLean was drunk and that she wanted him to leave, but he was refusing to do so. The police reports would state that police did witness a very intoxicated McLean who was argumentative, but they wouldn't do anything other than inform Hines of the formal process of evicting someone legally. Hines would take no such action against McLean. Hines would again contact police May 25th, 2016, reporting another domestic incident where McLean hit her and that he was refusing to leave, that this time she wanted to press charges. But by the time police arrived at the residence, Hines changed her mind again and McLean was not arrested. It would be also during this time, Hines and McLean somehow got custody of Dakota's older brother, Kay Leo. How and why this happened, it's not clear. But this would mark the beginning of authorities and child services becoming aware of just what was going on in that house. Because on August 20th, 2016, Kay Leo ran away from home by jumping out of a second-story window. And when the police found him, he told police he was forced to do squats while holding a heavy backpack as punishment. A referral was made to Child Services. The police took the boy back to the home on Kensington Drive and wanted to do a search, but McLean had pit bulls, so the police couldn't access the property. Now, I'm not sure why they couldn't have simply requested McLean to restrain the dogs. Maybe he refused, and since police didn't have a warrant or really grounds for a warrant, there really wasn't anything more they could do. Regardless, they did question why McLean had a number of surveillance cameras at the home, but McLean said they weren't in working order and they were just for show. However, McLean would later contradict this on September 14th, 2016. McLean would call 911 to report someone had tried to break into his home and they made threats towards his family while pointing a gun at him, and that he could prove all of this in the way of CCTV footage he recorded on his home surveillance cameras, the same ones that didn't work a month earlier. It would also be around this time Dakota's older brother Kay Leo went back to live with his mother, leaving Dakota to be the sole target of McLean's violent outbursts. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Dakota was enrolled in Horace Mann Elementary School in Dayton, Ohio. Dakota's teachers would later speak very highly of the little boy, that despite the difficult situation he came from, he was the sweetest kid you could ever meet. And to say he came from a difficult situation was an understatement. Dakota came to school wearing dirty clothes and smelling of human waste. He would have these embarrassingly bad haircuts, all of which made him a prime target for bullying. The school did everything they could to help Dakota. Every morning they gave him some fresh clothes from the clothing pool to wear during the day whilst they washed the ones he arrived in. And then at the end of the day, he would get changed back into his old clothes to go back home in. Any injuries he had, and Dakota would often come to school with cuts, bruises and abrasions, but the school nurse would tend to them. Unfortunately, the school could only do so much. The school made a total of 17 reports to CPS, but these all seemed to have landed on deaf ears. McLean seemed to almost take offence that someone would want to show Dakota some kindness. When he discovered what the school was doing to help his son, he showed up to lodge a complaint. That under no circumstances was Dakota allowed to see a doctor. He also demanded to receive daily updates on Dakota's behaviour, and Dakota never could meet the impossible standards of McLean. Most days he'd be forced to stand in the punishment pose, facing the wall holding heavy books over his head, from the time he got home from school until he was allowed to go to bed. Not that Dakota had a bedroom. He was forced to sleep in the attic, where his bed was a lawn chair, in theory anyway, because he was rarely allowed to sleep on it. Instead, Dakota would sleep on the floor with a blanket. McLean set up a camera in the attic to watch his son 24 hours a day to make sure Dakota was complying with the rules. CPS contacted McLean and offered a range of resources from medical to psychological and parenting. But McLean refused this assistance, and instead he'd take out this intrusion on Dakota by beating him, throwing him, kicking him. Any bruises he would get from these assaults would be covered with long-sleeved shirts and pants, regardless of the weather outside. May 11th, 2018. McLean sends Dakota to school in a diaper, which the bus driver sees, and he contacts the school because he's concerned about the nine-year-old. Montgomery County CPS requested another welfare check on Dakota, but again, there was no answer. The next day, McLean is waiting for the bus, and he pulls a gun on the driver, threatening his life if he ever got involved in his business again. Ultimately, it was easier to hide the abuse towards Dakota if he never left the home. McLean withdrawing him from school in July of 2018, under the guise of homeschooling. In a move that would have crushed this little boy, school would have been the only reprieve for Dakota from the constant fear of abuse and neglect. Even though he was being bullied by the other kids in a sad way, being at school would have been the only time Dakota would have felt safe, to feel like someone cared about him. But now without this space, Dakota would have felt nothing but fear and hopelessness. Homeschooling gave McLean free range to mistreat Dakota however he liked, with a wide range of punishments when he misbehaved in his eyes. And the abuse only got worse, with Dakota spending the majority of his day alone in the attic. McLean threw out all of Dakota's clothing, forcing the boy to walk around naked from here on through. November 18th, 2018. Dakota tried to tunnel through the drywall of the attic and launch himself through the attic window to run away. He would have known his brother did something similar to run away, and that event was the catalyst of him going back to his mother. Dakota would have known the abuse and the horrific treatment towards him was becoming increasingly worse. That if he stayed there, it wasn't going to end well. He was trying to save himself, but McLean caught him in the act. McLean called Dayton police to report his son as being destructive and acting unruly. That he wanted the police to take him to the Juvenile Justice Centre. The police attended to the home and got as far as putting Dakota in the back seat of the police cruiser. It was at this point McLean had a change of heart, and he decided he no longer wanted to press charges, and instead was going to take his son to Kettering Hospital for behavioural analysis. So the police released Dakota back to McLean's custody. And this did happen. During this visit to the hospital, doctors treated Takoda for minor injuries that McLean and Hines claimed he did to himself. And Takoda made no mention of the abuse to the social workers. However, it must be noted, McLean and Hines were present for all of this. Takoda did not have time by himself away from his father and stepmother to feel safe enough to possibly speak freely about what was going on in the family home. Psychological counselling was recommended, and these were offered free of charge to the family to help them provide Takoda with what he needed. But this was something that McLean would never follow up, and he would be offered this time and time again. But when the social workers contacted McLean to help him organise the counselling, he declined the offer. After this, Takoda was moved out of the attic and into the basement, while McLean arranged for all the windows to be walled off to prevent Takoda from again attempting to run away. This basement was absolutely disgusting. The pit bull dogs were kept in there, so there was feces and urine everywhere, and Takoda was made to sleep on the floor naked without even a blanket. When Takoda was released from the basement hell confinement and back to the attic, the space was significantly smaller. Because the windows were no longer, there was no natural sunlight or fresh air. Takoda was only allowed to use the bathroom when McLean's brother was asleep. Strangely, McLean was under this belief Takoda was gay, and that he was trying to seduce the other little boy in the home. McLean would also humiliate Takoda by only referring to him using traditionally feminine names. Without the reprieve of school, Takoda would now spend his entire days in painful torture poses, with all three adults in the home watching this happen. And if the other adults witnessed Takoda moving out of these poses without permission, they were ordered to immediately tell McLean, who would then beat on the boy. This poor little boy did not have a break. There was always someone there. Ebert didn't work. There were always eyes on Takoda to make sure he was suffering and in pain. And for reasons that I'm not sure why, maybe for later gratification, but McLean would take photos on his iPad of Takoda in these excruciating positions. It got to the point that even at night when Takoda should be sleeping, he didn't even get a break from the abuse then. McLean forced his son to stand in what he would call the punishment pose, which involved Takoda bending over naked so his hands were touching the floor, and he had no option but to stand in this position for up to 20 hours a day. And given the surveillance cameras, if he broke this pose, he would be beaten aggressively. And just when you think you've heard the worst of what happened here, we haven't even started. There would come to a time in these 20 hours a day when Takoda needed to go to the bathroom, but he wasn't allowed. So he had no other option but to defecate on the floor. McLean, watching him on the cameras, saw this and he raced upstairs. He picked up the excrement and forced him to eat it. Now, of course, Takoda refused to initially. But McLean would hold this sweet little boy down and hold his mouth closed until he swallowed. McLean would then beat Takoda, slamming him onto the floor. After this, Takoda knew he had no other option. He knew the consequences if he went to the bathroom on the floor and just left it. So if he happened to defecate on the floor, he would pick it up and eat it immediately. And McLean would have been watching all of this happen. Takoda's mother, Robin Collins, had spent her time since losing custody of her son in and out of prison and rehab. But by the end of 2018, she was clean and sober and wanting to reconnect with Takoda and be a part of his life. She wanted at least some custody back, for a chance to be his mother. But she was searching for McLean and Takoda in Erie, Pennsylvania, because that was where McLean had permission to move to with Takoda. It wouldn't be until McLean was arrested for a DUI that she was able to locate her son's whereabouts in Dayton, Ohio. It was very clear to Collins very quickly there was something wrong going on. May 6, 2019. Collins filed a motion of contempt in a Wisconsin court against Al McLean. Quote, "Mr. McLean never brought Takoda to see me once since he left the state. I've spoken to him once on the phone in 4 years. Unquote. The Wisconsin court dismissed the motion because, as McLean now lived in Ohio, this was out of their jurisdiction. So Collins only had one thing she could do. She called the police and told them she believed her son was being abused and he was in danger. But police records would show no action was taken. That after a brief discussion with McLean, Hines and Takoda, it was the belief of police Takoda was being well taken care of and all his needs were being met. Now, unfortunately, as we see in a lot of child abuse cases, The child won't always speak up about what is happening to them due to the fear of repercussions. But they're admitting to police that the abuse would only result in further punishments. Children also have a desire to please their caregiver, regardless of the abuse, and think that if they comply and basically protect their parents, then they will be rewarded and maybe the abuse will stop. And sometimes it does for a time. But ultimately the situation returns to how it was before, if not worsens. And unfortunately for Dakota, that would be the case. Before we get to this part of the story, this is where we will discuss the final days of Dakota's life, and this is the worst case of child abuse I have ever heard. And after Nia Glassy, I never thought I would say that. There are many of you that will know this story, so I imagine if you are listening, you know what is to come and what Dakota went through before he dies. But if you don't, please don't think this is me being dramatic. This is very intense and very horrific. Maybe skip the next 10 minutes if you don't want to hear the details of the abuse Dakota went through at the hands of his father. December 12, 2019. McLean had spent the night out drinking heavily. When he returned home, he moved Dakota from the torture position he'd been in for most of the day, and he told the boy to go to his room in the attic. McLean would follow Dakota and take out his drunken anger on the vulnerable 10-year-old. Jennifer Ebert would later report to police. She could hear Dakota crying and begging his father to stop. But of course she did nothing to stop the abuse and to help Dakota. Instead, Ebert would go to her bedroom, shut the door, and she went to sleep. Honestly, it speaks volumes of these people that they could just go to sleep and ignore what is happening to Dakota. They all knew exactly what McLean was capable of. Hines is also asleep, on the couch in the living room. The sounds of Dakota's screams woke her, and like Ebert, she did nothing to save Dakota. She simply sat and watched the monitor showing McLean punching the boy repeatedly in the stomach. McLean then forced Dakota to drink so much water that he would half drown, leaving Dakota choking and vomiting lying on the floor. McLean then went downstairs and went to sleep. The following morning, December 13, 2019, Jennifer Ebert allowed Dakota out of the attic prison to use the bathroom. Dakota could barely walk. He was weak and gravely injured, having to hold onto the walls to be able to make it down the stairs, falling several times. McLean, seeing this, pushed Dakota in the back and ordered his son back upstairs. McLean followed Dakota, and once in the attic, McLean gave the boy instructions to put away his folding chair bed and bend over in the punishment pose, bent over with his hands touching the ground in front of him. Given the condition Dakota was in, he could not move quick enough for McLean's liking, and McLean beat on him. Dakota was then ordered to lie on his stomach while McLean stood on his back. This is a grown man standing on the back of an injured and emaciated 10-year-old boy. But this wasn't enough for McLean. He wanted Dakota to feel the full force of his weight. He reached up and pushed against the ceiling. After this, McLean had Dakota stand again in the punishment pose, and he went downstairs to watch TV with Ebert and his little brother. All the while, McLean would shout out derogatory names at the 10-year-old, referring to his assumed sexuality. Dakota broke the rules and he moved, most likely from the pain caused by his injuries, but this was not acceptable. McLean went upstairs and poured hot sauce directly inside Dakota's anus. And this hot sauce punishment was basically a daily occurrence for Dakota. But McLean wasn't satisfied this was enough at this point. He would throw his son around the room some more, before grabbing him by his ears and dragging him downstairs. McLean dragged Dakota to the bathroom and ordered him to clean himself up. Again, Dakota didn't move fast enough for McLean's liking. McLean threatened him that unless he moved faster, McLean was going to drown him. How terrified this little boy must have been feeling. He literally would not have been able to move any faster. He would have been weak and in excruciating pain, and he would have been scared. It was inevitable. He wasn't going to move fast enough for McLean. His father throwing Dakota in the bath, holding his head underwater. Ebert would later report she was sitting in the living room when this was happening, and that she could hear the splashing of Dakota trying to get above the water to catch his breath. Still not done, McLean then took Dakota back upstairs. Ebert would later tell police she saw Dakota lying on his lawn chair bed in the fetal position. McLean was standing behind him. Ebert could see McLean making a repetitive motion with his hand near Dakota's bottom. Ebert couldn't quite make out what was happening, but she assumed McLean was again using the hot sauce. But the reality is much more horrific. When McLean came downstairs, he was carrying a chair leg, which he tossed behind a dresser. Ebert didn't think much of it, and instead of asking questions or checking on Dakota to make sure he was okay, she shrugged the incident off and went to bed for a nap. It would only be shortly after that Hines would awaken her in a panic. Dakota was not breathing and he was unresponsive. But instead of calling for 911 and attempting to revive the little boy, Hines and Ebert decided to go out with McLean's baby brother. McLean went upstairs and unplugged the video camera before he called 911.
911, yes. What's the location of your emergency?
Yes, my son is unresponsive right now.
Your son is unresponsive? Hold on. What's your address?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What's the address where he is?
The address is 1934 Kensington Drive.
1934 Kensington? So you said your son is unresponsive? Okay, you said your son is unresponsive?
Yep.
Okay, how old is he?
He's a child with a lot of medical issues. So what he do is he'll just
Stop, just for a minute. How old is he?
He's 11 years old.
Okay.
In 3 days.
And when you say he's unresponsive, is he breathing?
Yeah, but barely. I mean, he got skin tone.
Okay, just stay on the line with me for just a sec. Let me get him started, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You breathing? Hello?
I'm here. You talking to me?
No, I'm talking to my child.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure I'm still here. All right, they're on their way to 1934 Kensington Drive, right?
Yes.
Is that
I'm blowing in his breath.
Okay, it's
and it smells real rotten in the inside of his stomach.
Okay, is that a house or an apartment?
It's a house, ma'am.
Okay. So if he's breathing, let him breathe. So what I want you to do, I need you to lay him flat on the ground just for a minute, okay? Lay him flat on the ground so we can check his breathing, okay?
Okay, he's laid out on his ground now.
Okay, he's on his back?
Yes.
Okay, so I need you to check to see if his chest is rising, like look at it, and if you, is it rising up and down, rising and falling like he's breathing? Check that, and then let me know. And also, if you can feel or hear any breath out of his mouth or nose.
No, it's not rising up and down.
Okay. You said he's. We're going to go ahead and start CPR, okay? So keep him laying
at
where he is, okay?
Okay. He got something coming out of his mouth.
Okay, what's coming out? What do you think is coming out?
I'm not sure what it is.
Okay. I want you to turn him on his side. Turn him on his side. That way, in case he vomits, he doesn't choke on it. So go ahead and turn him on his side, okay?
Okay. I did.
Can you clean that out of his mouth a little bit? Take your fingers and clean it out of his mouth just so he doesn't choke on anything?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me know when you've done that, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Whatever ain't it coming out very, very rotten. It's a lot in his air passage, ma'am.
Okay, I understand. You said he has medical history. What kind of medical history does he have?
I mean, just mental behavior. See, he just hurts himself all the time. Okay. He wake up, don't get a grade, slam his head, eat his shit.
All right, I understand. Okay.
It never ends.
Okay, so is he still on his side?
Is he still on his side? Yes.
Okay, are you cleaning whatever you can out of his mouth?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, do you think he could have taken anything, or you have no idea?
No, I don't give him access to anything.
Okay, go ahead.
I know he likes to eat his own poop and lay in his own pee all day.
Okay.
He won't stop at no cost.
Okay.
You all right?
Is he responding to it at all? Is he breathing?
It's hard to say. I see his eyes.
Okay, and what are his eyes doing? Like, are they moving? Is any part of his body moving?
No, he's just still.
Okay, go ahead and lay him on his back again. If you think his mouth
now
is moving,
he's out his nose. He's going up out his nose now.
Okay, then so lay him on his side, okay?
Yes, ma'am. What about his CPR?
Well, you need to clean out his air passages as best you can before you can start CPR.
That's what you're trying to hold it in there.
If you think it's as clean up as you can do it, then you can go ahead and start with the breath. You tell me. Is there anyone else there with you, sir?
No, ma'am.
Okay, is the door unlocked?
Yeah, the front door is unlocked.
Okay, they're on their way. Okay, you're going to start breathing into his mouth, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I want you to...
Clear the air passage out.
Okay, fine. Yes, clear it out as best you can. I understand that there's something in there.
Yeah.
So you're going to tilt his head up, his forehead up, so it's facing the ceiling, so his airway is open as best as you can, and you're going to blow
his forehead up.
Yeah, tilt his forehead up a little bit.
Okay.
And you're going to blow two breaths into his mouth, okay? You're going to cover his mouth with your mouth. Go ahead.
God.
Okay, and tell me if you see anything that's different. Is he breathing, like, is it Roch's chest? And check for any
no, ma'am.
Okay. Then you're going to continue to give him mouth to mouth. We're going to do chest compressions, okay? So you're going to put your two hands between his breastbone, and you're going to press down hard and fast, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
So go ahead and continue doing that. You're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Can you count with me? Tell me when you're doing it, please.
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay, go ahead and give him a breath, okay? When you breathe in, if you can face his chest and see if you can see his chest rising up and down with your breath.
Nothing.
Okay, I want you to go ahead and continue with the chest compressions, okay? And we're going to go ahead and count.
No air?
No, just go ahead and do with the chest compressions right now. 5, 6, 7, count with me, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, keep going.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Rather than do anything to save his son's life, McLean would spend much of the call complaining what a terrible child Dakota was and how difficult he was to parent, instead of focusing on the fact his son was not breathing and was unresponsive. At one point during the phone call, McLean can be heard gagging while attempting CPR, before complaining how Dakota's breath smells like his stomach was rotting. Paramedics arrived at the scene to a literal house of horrors. Dakota Collins was declared dead at the scene, 3 days before his 11th birthday. When paramedics told McLean his son had died, his response was indifferent, simply stating he got emergency services to his son as fast as he could. Paramedics did continue to attempt resuscitation efforts in the ambulance en route to the hospital, even though at this point, Takata's beaten body had started to go into rigor mortis and it was far too late to save his life. Takata's autopsy revealed the true extent of the torture this sweet little boy went through. Evidence of acute injuries as well as historical injuries still in the process of healing were present. Bruising to the right side of Dakota's forehead, right side of his chin, inside both the upper and lower lip, and inside his left nostril. Dakota's scalp had deep bruising and lacerations, numerous fractured ribs and internal bruising to his stomach, severe pulmonary edema fluid in his lungs. Dakota's back, buttocks and legs showed evidence of scarring all over, as well as fresh bruising. On his back was a branding scar of the letter T. To Cutter's buttocks was so deeply bruised, it was bruised completely through to the bone. To Cutter's digestive system, his stomach, was filled with feces. There were significant injuries to Dakota's anus, 2 half-inch lacerations with significant internal bleeding. That chair leg that Ebert saw McLean discard of on the day of Dakota's death. McLean had used the broken chair leg to sodomize this child with, causing significant and severe internal bleeding. The medical examiner determined 10-year-old Dakota Collins's cause of death to be due to blunt force trauma to the back of the neck, causing catastrophic and fatal injuries to Dakota's spine and brain, the same type of injury that would be caused by a high-speed car crash. The secondary cause of death was determined to be due to asphyxia from water submersion, basically drowning. The medical examiner noted that none of Dakota's injuries could have been self-inflicted, manner of death being homicide. December 16, 2019. Dayton police conducted an official search of the home where Dakota once lived. Actually, it was no home and no life for Dakota. It was a house where Dakota once resided. He existed barely. McLean's baby brother was removed from McLean's custody and placed into foster care. A search of the house. You would be surprised to even know Dakota lived there. There were many family photos scattered throughout, but none featured Dakota. When investigators ascended to the attic where Dakota spent his days, they were overwhelmed by the smell of feces and urine. There were no lights and the windows were boarded, investigators having to use flashlights to see anything in the room. The room smelt horribly, leading the officers to gag upon entering. There was no furniture apart from the broken chair. The 2 missing legs of the chair would later be found downstairs, covered in Dakota's blood. There was no clothing in the room, no books, no toys. Nothing to indicate that a child lived there. Officers found a second closed room in the attic. Inside this room was a bloodied tarp and a lawn chair that Dakota used as a bed. Well, when he was allowed to anyway. And what would become an important piece of evidence was a dismantled video camera. A camera that recorded such horrors no one could even imagine possible. After his arrest, McLean showed no remorse for the abuse he inflicted on his deceased son. Before he called 911, he attempted to claim Dakota to cover any trace of his involvement. He would tell police he took Dakota down to the bathroom and washed him off in the bathtub. Although he would claim the injuries caused with the broken chair leg weren't that bad in his opinion, just a little bruising. I really truly hope that someone gets a hold of him in prison and causes what he calls a little bruising. Although in his version of events, McLean claimed that Dakota sodomized himself with the broken chair leg, and that he had to wrestle it out of his grasp to get him to stop. And when he did get it out of him, that's when blood squirted out. The fact that McLean would think that anyone would believe this ridiculous story, that a 10-year-old would do this all to himself, it is absolutely insane. Even on his jail call to Hines, there was no grief or compassion for what he had done. Instead, McLean complained about his discomfort. He needed clothes and it smelt and he had no underwear. That he was cold and hungry. That the bed was too hard. That he was worried the other inmates were going to harm him. This was only a minuscule part of Dakota's daily existence and he has the gall to complain. Amanda Hines wasn't any better. She didn't feel bad for her role in Dakota's death. All that was of her concern was freeing McLean. She created a GoFundMe in Dakota's name, but this wasn't to pay for any memorial. Hines planned to use the funds and a legal team to represent McLean in his upcoming criminal trial. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
December 20th, 2019. Dayton police arrested Amanda Hines and Jennifer Ebert at their home on Kensington Drive. The fact they could stay in that place knowing the horrors that took place there, it says everything you need to know about them right there. But both were charged with child endangerment and involuntary manslaughter. Al McLean was indicted on charges including three counts of child endangerment and one count each of rape, murder and kidnapping. Accused of abusing Takota between November 1, 2018 to his death on December 13, 2019, he would enter a plea of guilty, most likely to escape the prosecution seeking the death penalty. September 29, 2021. Ohio Judge Dennis Atkins addressed McLean in sentencing, quote, "What you did was pure evil. You provided no mercy to your son, and you deserve none from this court," unquote. McLean was sentenced the maximum allowed sentence of 51 years to life in prison for the torture and murder of his 11-year-old son. He'll be eligible for parole on November 30th, 2070. McLean's fiancée, Amanda Hines, was sentenced to a minimum of 22 years in prison, while her sister, Jennifer Ebert, received a prison term of just 8 years. The Dayton School Superintendent, Elizabeth Lolly, would later publicly damn the inaction of Montgomery County CPS and Dayton Police by stating Takota's teachers called CPS 17 times to report abuse concerns. Quote, "I don't blame his teachers at all. They did what they could. But people in authority and administration of protecting our children should do more," unquote. At the time of Takota's death, Montgomery County CPS did not have an open case in relation to the abuse and neglect of Takota Collins.
17 times teachers and staff reached out to authorities while Takota Collins was a student at Horace Mann Elementary. But after Al Mutahan McLean pulled his son from the school in order to homeschool him, DPS no longer had contact with Takota and state law kept them from checking in.
I am very grateful that they did report it, that they stepped up, they did what they needed to do. They did what they felt was morally right for that child.
Takota's mother, Robin Collins, would go on to sue Montgomery County CPS. She would be awarded $3.25 million in damages.
Robin Collins says she plans to take legal action against Children's Services in Montgomery County and in Wisconsin, where she lives. She says she contacted Children's Services in both states months before her son's death.
As I mentioned at the start of this episode, we have heard some horrific and unbelievable stories here on this podcast, but what Takota went through, what his entire existence was for the last few years of his life. It is something that I don't think anyone could imagine being possible. Yet this was every minute of every day for this child. The number of agencies and people who let Takota down is ridiculous. Once Takota was removed from school, no one did anything to make sure this child was safe. He was fouled in the worst way possible. The fact two people stood by knowing all of this was happening and did nothing. I don't know what to say. McLean should not have ever gotten custody of Takota in the first instance, yet alone all the warning signs being not only missed but completely ignored. I don't know when Child Services and the police are going to do something to change their policies and procedures so these stories stop happening, because Takota's blood is on their hands. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. I also have a Patreon where for as little as $2 a month, not only would you be supporting my podcast, but you will also receive not only this podcast episode early and ad-free, but all of my podcasts, Love to Death, Mysteriously Listed and Beyond Your Nightmares, as well as one Patreon exclusive episode a month. If you are interested and able, I will have the link in the show notes. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.